Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com, you can reach us through either of those channels. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Jerry, I'll get back to Jerry Needler in a few minutes. He's, of course, the chairman of the House, I believe it's the House Justice Committee, and Attorney General William Barr was testifying today, and among other things, Mr. Needler believes that established evidence of Antifa violence is somehow a myth. At one point, Attorney General Barr had to requested a 5-minute washroom break, and the chairman turned him down. Now, this is not only classless, but it's a little bit on the savage side. Men of a certain age often have prostate problems and require frequent trips to the bathroom. This should be pretty well understood, and what Needler did was just plain ridiculous. Here is a report on today's proceedings before the House Judiciary Committee, and where, among other things, Chairman Needler denied that Antifa had been involved in acts of violence. But it seems a ridiculous accusation to me. Position to take because I don't think it's even at all controversial. So the House Judiciary Committee train wreck hearing of William Barr came to a head when the Attorney General was initially denied a 5-minute break during the Democrats' final few speakers on Tuesday. Representative Jerry Needler, Democrat of New York, went to introduce Representative Madeline Dean, Democrat of Pennsylvania, to question the Attorney General. When Barr asked, "Mr. Chairman, could we take a 5-minute break? Could we take a 5-minute break, Mr. Chairman?" Needler screamed no in response. That's a common courtesy of every witness. Representative Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, yelled, "I've waited 45 minutes. I've waited an hour for you this morning," Barr said to Needler, who was late after he was involved in a car crash. "I haven't had lunch. I would like a 5-minute break." "Mr. Attorney General, we are almost finished," Needler responded. "We're going to finish in a few minutes. We can certainly take a break, but you're a class act," Barr said while laughing. "You're a class act." Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio chimed in. "He wants a break now. You just showed rudeness, which is now on display. Let's let the Attorney General have a break." Finally, Needler broke down and indeed allow him for the 5-minute break. But this is almost unbelievable in the pettiness, and that's, well, here's something further on Needler. And this actually didn't occur at the committee hearing. This is that fat little toad being questioned by a man on the street.
"There's violence across the whole country. Do you disavow the violence from Antifa that's happening in Portland right now?
That's a myth. It's being spread only in Washington, D.C.
About Antifa in Portland?
Yes.
But sir, there's videos everywhere online. There's fires and riots. They're throwing fireworks at federal officers. DHS is there. Look online. It gets crazy, Mr. Nadler."
So he says it's a myth being spread that Antifa is violent. Well, up here in the Dominion of Canada, we had hearings of our own. These two Kielberger brothers, we call them charity entrepreneurs. In the last 25 years, they have built themselves a real empire around the concept of we. You know, that's the, we're all this in this together in the world. We, and that's the charity W-E. They have an ad. They have an affiliated group called We Me to We, which is actually, although it sounds like a charity, is actually a for-profit organization. It sells trinkets from the third world, you know, supposedly made by by properly compensated labor in environmentally friendly conditions, things like bracelets and various other things. But anyway, the profits from that supposedly go to We, the charity. They also have other entities named We, or they have We in their titles, one of which holds over $47 million worth of real estate in an up and coming area of downtown Toronto, just to the east of the absolute downtown core, which is where We has its headquarters. And it just gets better. We also has some extensive property holdings in far off Kenya. Anyway, well, what has brought this to the attention of the Canadian government, or I mean the Canadian media and the opposition, is the fact that We is very closely tied to the Prime Minister and his family, and to many members of the federal cabinet, including the ludicrously named Minister for Diversity, Inclusion, and Youth. And you scratch your head trying to figure out, well, what does a Minister for Diversity, Inclusion, and Youth do? I get the youth part. You know, sort of, you know, more traditional government should simply be called the Youth Minister or the Minister for Youth. You know, you get a general idea of the direction that, that her work would take her in. But diversity, inclusion, and youth, what the heck does it mean? Of course, it's, these are good politically correct slogans, but what does it mean? Well, anyway, she's tied to the Me to We lot. In fact, some communications between them that she did not actually reveal in her testimony last week before the Commons Finance Committee. The We group, which was started by these preachy Kielberger brothers, Mark and Craig Kielberger, they're extremely well connected. They've been on the Oprah show. They're friends with the Clintons. They've been longtime friends of the Prime Minister. They backed his effort to win the leadership of the Liberal Party some years back. He has been a regular speaker at these We rallies, and then more recently, his mother, Margaret Trudeau, Margaret Kemper, has been she's spoken, I believe, 28 times. You wonder, well, what does a woman in her 60s have to offer? I mean, not to be unkind, but these are high school students. Unless you're a movie star or a living saint, you know, maybe the Dalai Lama or somebody like that, it's hard to understand from a PR point of view just what would make her such a hot commodity. Not only a hot commodity, but she's being paid, it turns out from testimony today, over $312,000 for her speeches, which would make it something a little over $1,000 for a talk. Well, that's not a bad scratch for an hour's work. Plus over $150,000 in travel expenses. You wonder, where did she travel from? I mean, did they bring her in from Antarctica? Anyway, this is the life of the rich and entitled. Well, the problem with the whole we business is that the government dreamed up an idea, or let's say somebody dreamed up the idea, that in dealing with the devastation caused by the shutdown of our economy, thanks to the reactions of both the federal and provincial governments to the COVID virus situation, and the policy of, in many ways, crippling the economy to, as they say, flatten the curve, that is, curtail the number of instances of the Wuhan flu. The government thought that they should do something for university students, or perhaps students in general, because students were having trouble finding summer work. Many jobs have been lost. We have an official unemployment rate of about 13%. So official jobs have been, many summer jobs have been lost. Many businesses that might have taken on students are no longer in business, or at least have suspended operations. So yes, there's a need. Well, somewhere along the line, this morphed into the idea, well, maybe we should fund young people for volunteering. Well, is there something weird about this? Fund for volunteer. Volunteer means you do it for free. You know, if you volunteer to read, read stories to young children, you don't get paid for it. Anyway, this program was quickly slapped together, and there's a lot of reason to believe that we had quite a role in this. It was slapped together, and then it was decided by the government without putting out any tenders, that is, you know, seeking applications from others to administer it, chose the WE organization to administer it. And this would bring quite a financial benefit to WE, which was struggling financially for reasons that are not entirely clear. One, perhaps, in March being that there being a massive fall off of donations because a lot of people who've been donors are now unemployed. Companies that have been donors, and they've been very good at schmoozing big corporations. Many of them are cutting back. So when you're trying to cut back, some of the charity donations are among the first to go. Well, anyway, all of this is by way of background. So the Kielbergers, that's Craig and Mark, who founded WE and run it, testified today before the House of Commons Finance Committee, and along with a former chairman of their board of directors, who was basically urged to strong-armed into resigning earlier this year. And there's a lot that meets there's a lot more than meets the eye. Anyway, this is the Financial Post's report. Co-founders of WE Charity testified at the House of Commons committee that they regret ever accepting a contract to administer a $912 million student volunteer program that has attracted weeks of controversy and ethics investigations into the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister, both of whom have close ties to WE. The finance minister last week suddenly remembered $41,000 and change worth of free travel WE had given him that he had not reimbursed them for. And you wonder, if the idea all along was that he's a multi-gazillionaire, the finance minister, Bill Morneau. But anyway, you would think if the arrangement all along was that that he would pay his own way, but somehow we had picked up at least $43,000 worth of travel and accommodations for him and his wife in Kenya for one trip, I think it was 2017, and in Ecuador in another trip for another trip. You would think that 2 or 3 years on down the line, their accountants would have said, "Jesus, we should be billing old Morneau there for $43,000 of travel." In fact, what we does is that it apparently lavishly entertains high rollers in the hopes that they will cough up big bucks. And in fact, Morneau, as recently as April, wrote them a check, I believe it was for $50,000. Now, there's nothing wrong with that's the way they want to schmooze donors. Well, there's nothing legally wrong with that. Except that, of course, Bill Morneau is the finance minister. And as it turns out, we has had numerous contracts which pay them from the federal government since Justin Trudeau became prime minister in 2015. In a three-year period before that, we had contracts worth about $500,000. In the 4 years up to 2019, since Trudeau took over, it's in the I believe it's about $5 million. So they've done well because of their relationship with Trudeau and to Morneau and apparently other members of the cabinet. Now this is where it becomes a conflict of interest. If I am a wealthy person, and we chooses to take me to their $4,000 a night accommodations, lodge, or whatever it is in Kenya. I can't even imagine $4,000 a night. But anyway, if in the hopes of showing me a good time, I will decide to write a big old check. That is fair enough, but not when you're a politician. In fact, that violates conflict of interest. If we has relations with the government, business with the government, and it does, and the finance minister has serious say over what money is spent, then that is conflict of interest. Anyway, back to the National Post story. Craig Hilberger, alongside his brother Mark, who helped him found the organization 25 years ago, told MPs that they did not receive a direct call from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau about the program, and that they would never have taken the call from civil service if they'd known how controversial the program would be. You've got to listen to the nuances here. They wouldn't have taken the call from the civil service. What do they say here? They claim they were approached by the civil service. One of the ongoing problems with that is it's hard to imagine the civil service wanting to fob off the management of a almost $1 billion program to the private sector. I mean, they're civil servants. They're part of their background is administering government programs. I mean, that's what civil servants do. Why would you spin this off to a private charity? There's a very strong suspicion that the civil service would not do that without at least a nod or a nudge, nudge, wink, wink from very senior politicians. Continuing the story. We did this to be of service to the government, not for government to help us, said Craig Kielberger. We charity could never have made any money on this contribution agreement. This was the ask from the government. We did not submit a proactive proposal. But we do know they did submit some proposals, at least two. And they said they could not make money. Well, they'd certainly be paid for what they were doing. They were going to be paid, and the figures vary, but something like $43 million. And this gets even richer. The agreement had not even been approved by cabinet before some funds, $19 million it would appear, was advanced. Before the actual agreement was inked. Now, in the they have now withdrawn from the program, but that's not the point. Although We Charity was ready to navigate a difficult path this year, the political scandal that erupted from the student volunteer program has posed serious challenges that risk the entire organization, said Craig Kielberger. Now, let's parse our way through that. We Charity was ready to navigate a difficult path this year, probably because the major turndown in donations and it's not being explained, but they broke some sort of agreement with their bank. They don't know what that means, but they had problems. In the first hour of what was a marathon four-hour committee hearing, the brothers found themselves in heated exchanges with Conservative MP Pierre Poilievre and NDP MP Charlie Angus. Angus quizzed Mark Kielberger about testimony heard earlier in the day from former Chairman Michelle Douglas, who said Mark Kielberger hung up on her after a tense phone call, and shortly thereafter she was told to submit her resignation. Mark, you hung up on her. Is that how you guys do business? Said Angus. It was a great amount of money that was given to your organization, and Canadians are asking questions. Mark Kielberger says he disputes the characterization of the conversation. Well, she also testified that she was basically forced out. And this is even more upsetting, as a board of directors, they were unable to get financial information from the brothers. With the strong feeling that they were simply to be a figurehead board of directors, you know, as a charity, you have to have a board of directors, so you put some people on the board that won't ask too many questions, don't know too much, but can smile and look good, and life goes on. Well, apparently, when she or others started to ask questions, they were frozen out, and in fact, almost the entire board of directors of WE, both in Canada and the United States, has been replaced in the past few months. So this is Michelle Douglas, the former chairman of the board in Canada. Douglas told the committee that she resigned from the charity because she was blocked from scrutinizing mass layoffs at the organization in the face of the pandemic. After a particularly dramatic teleconference about financial oversight, Douglas was asked to hand in her resignation. I'll simply say that the call was abruptly concluded, said Douglas. Well, they hung up on her, or she was hung up on. So what was she trying to do? More financial oversight, and she wanted to scrutinize mass layoffs at the charity because of the COVID crisis. And first, this is a report from someone, the person who was listening. First question from this is the Conservative member of Parliament, Pierre Poilievre, on video where Mark Kielberger says the PMO called them. That's Prime Minister's office, Mark Kielberger. We were very excited about the prospect of the program. Got a little bit ahead of myself. I didn't have full details, and the spoke as soon as I realized I misspoke. He says the Prime Minister never did call us. Now, he did tell a group meeting that the Prime Minister's office did, although he has since recanted that. The controversy for the government has only deepened since, as the federal ethics watchdog has launched probes of Justin Trudeau and Finance Minister Bill Morneau over their involvement in cabinet decisions, despite Wheeze having paid Trudeau's family members speaking fees and Morneau's familial ties to the group. Both of his daughters have worked for Wee, and one still does. Morneau has given and his wife have given considerable amounts of money, their own money. Further compounding problems for the finance minister was his admission last week that he had just repaid the organization more than $41,000 in travel expenses for Wee sponsored trips that he and his family took 3 years ago. I'm going to try to play a video clip from today of the proceedings. We may not be able to get that, but we will try here. These are the House of Commons hearings today. And to this whole Wee charity. And, it is super social justice warrior, do-goodery.
Called Wind of Change, which is an eight-part investigation into a crazy story that I heard years ago, that the famous 1990 power ballad, Wind of Change, by the heavy metal band Scorpions, was secretly written by the CIA. And I'm...
Okay, that's the... This was an ad, was not the... what I wanted to share, and looks as though we might not be able to do that. But incredibly interesting testimony today. Of course, it's all over at Twitter. And so the stuff that went on today. I'll see if I can... find a little bit more on this for you. Mogadishu North, that's a name for Toronto. We have a large Somali population. And this writer says, Mogadishu North, kudos from the politicians in the GTA for illegal gun-toting criminals for wearing masks while attempting to murder someone in his driveway. The alt-left liberal politicians appreciate that criminals adhere to wearing masks while shooting the innocent. Yes, that's pretty much the state of the degeneracy today. I'm going to see if I can... find out, get a little bit more here on the Kielbergers. I mean, Anthony Saloom writes, the Kielbergers made a serious mistake in not answering Member of Parliament Pierre Poilievre's question about whether they paid to hire an investigator. Their refusal to acknowledge that they were going to pay themselves as well made it all the worse. This has not been a good day for the Kielbergers, or we. The Kielbergers apparently sidestepped questions in a manner that made them seem like accomplished politicians. And in many ways, they really are accomplished hustlers. Here's
on your behalf, including a law firm, ever.
Here's Pierre Poilievre.
Ever hired a private investigators that may have looked into media personalities like Mr. Jesse Brown or reporter Jaron Kerr?
Sir, if I may say with due respect, you are reaching to the bottom of the barrel if Jesse Brown is now who you're quoting to bring
forward. I asked you a question, comments. And you're not answering it.
I can answer it very clearly, sir. There was a public exchange between Jesse Brown and the lawyer.
You're not answering.
Sir, I am. Yes. Mr. Chair, I'm going to answer very clearly with 2 points. Number one, there's a public exchange on Mr. Brown's...
Did your law firm hire
Mr. Polyev, your question.
That's the chairman intervening.
Respond, and we will
just call
conclude,
you back if you don't answer.
And we will conclude with Ms. Koutrakis, I believe, Mr. Kielbert.
So we will happily submit to you the Twitter exchange between the lawyer who was involved in the matter and Jeffrey Brown. It is on Jeffrey Brown's Twitter. It answers the question effectively. And sir,
so the very, very evasive. Kielbergers play hardball. In fact, I was listening to a reporter for, I think, Canada.com last week, and he said that that they have a long history of suing or threatening people, the Kielbergers do, who are investigate or sniffing around. Here's another front, so to speak. This is from Toronto. During a 4-month period, police arrested 97 people who were out on bail for firearms offenses. And it gets better. I mean, it gets worse. So while there's so much effort devoted by the government to try to seize the guns belonging to law-abiding Canadians, the justice system seems unable to keep people with gun offenses or charged with gun offenses under control. Amid rising gun violence, mayors and chiefs of police from across the Greater Toronto area are calling for changes to border security, tougher bail laws, and smarter investments in programming for families and at-risk youth. Mayor John Tory initiated Tuesday's meeting at City Hall, which included mayors from Brampton, Mississauga, Pickering, Markham, and regional chairs, I guess that's chairman, I don't imagine the furniture talks, from Peel, Durham, and York, to discuss solutions to combat unacceptable levels of shooting. Well, what's an acceptable level of shooting? Oh, I don't know. The closed-door gathering saw sobering new statistics about those victimized and allegedly causing the rising violence across the region. It doesn't really matter what the age is. If these things are happening, by definition, that's bad, Tory said. But it's even more disconcerting and more challenging for us to deal with a group of people, principally, who are much younger. And others, yeah, young. And they very carefully don't say who these people are. Almost to a man, the gunmen and the victims are Negroes, either mostly Jamaicans or Somalis, heavily involved in drugs, and as these gangs are in competition. Toronto has recently seen record-level violence with 292 people killed or injured in a total of 492 shootings in 2019, the highest number in at least 15 years. According to the most recent Toronto police statistics, there have been 23 shootings so far this year, 4 of them fatal. Of the 4 people killed, all were in their 20s, including Safiula Khosrowi, 15, who was shot dead after leaving Scarborough's Woburn Collegiate Institute last week, allegedly by another 15-year-old. Now, Safiula Khosrowi. I don't think that lad came from County Tipperary, do you? No, he didn't. Why don't we acknowledge and deal with the fact it's mostly black-on-black crime? According to Toronto Police statistics, 82% of the handguns they seized in 2019 had originated in the United States, while the remainder came from Canada. However, the 453 handguns Toronto Police seized, nearly a quarter, were not traced. anybody with any street smarts knows that the handguns coming across from the United States come almost entirely through the Indian reservations. Okay, well, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out, well, okay, if that's where they're coming from, why don't we do something about those reservations, raids on them, or cars are coming off the off the reservations, search them. Well, because of the nonsense to which our political class have subscribed, that these are nations, these are First Nations. And somehow, because the thing is, in some cases they straddle the border, they straddle the U.S. Canada border. Why not put a fence right through that reservation along the border, and anybody coming in across the border must account for themselves and get searched? Never mind this First Nations thing; they're not a nation. In fact, they suckle off the large dragging breast of the Canadian taxpayer. However, because we pretend that they are nations, we don't enforce the border. So a car or a truck drives in from on the American side with guns, which are probably legal in that part in the United States, across the border into Canada or the First Nation, and then proceed on beyond the reservation border with the guns. This is widely known. This is not deep inside knowledge that somehow I managed to scare up. Well, then, why isn't something done about it? Because our political class is trapped by their own nonsense. And so the crisis continues. The mayors will not, the police will not name the problem. It's black gangs, and they should put it to the community leaders. Never mind all your yapping about racism, systemic racism. It's your people killing your people. Do something about it. That's race realism. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Going to take my musical break right now. And this is a tribute by Merle Haggard, who of course gives his name to this program, The Fighting Side of Me. That was one of his signature songs. And this is a tribute by Merle Haggard and the Texas Playboys to Bob Wills, who was a tremendously important musical influence.
The sound we call Western Swing is the legacy of one man, the late Bob Wills. And tonight, Bob's former Texas Playboys have come from Tulsa, Houston, Sacramento, Chicago, Fresno, and Los Angeles, joined together with Merle Haggard from Bakersfield, to preserve the legend of the king of Western Swing, Bob Wills.
And that's, of course, Golly
Park. On the air. From near and far, if you want to know who we are, we're the Texas Playboys from the Lone Star State.
Thank you. Yes, that Bob Wills fiddle was heard around the world for over 40 years. And in the early 30s, Bob organized his Texas Playboys. And he felt like he just knew them personally because he called out their names when they played. And all these guys on stage were once with that band at one time or another. And we're especially honored to have with us one of the original members, Johnny Lee Wills. You know, Bob could take an old fiddle tune and just make it swing like where you wanted to dance. So before there's too much been said, let's all dance this old tune called Out of Red.
Today
getting late. Curtain and window story, why don't forget come next Sunday night. Tunes like Maiden's Prayer, the one you're hearing in the background now, Bob's granddaddy's old tune, Faded Love. Turn, make it swing like true jazz. Now hit it, boys. Here we go. The great San Antonio Rose. Thank you.
memory beneath the stars all along. It was there I found beside the Alamo, enchanting the strains that blew up above. That moonlit path that only she would know still hears my broken song of love.
There's a lady that I've known for many, many years who's been standing back here helping us with the background. She did Leona Williams' part on The Roots of My Raisin. She did the part on, what else do we do? We've done so many songs tonight. The Way I Am, I think it was. Isn't that what? Would you make welcome someone who is one of the greatest singers I've ever met, Miss Connie Smith. Would you make welcome? Good evening, Connie.
Are you all right?
You got on my cord. Don't get on my cord.
I'm sorry, Burl. How can I do that?
I knew people that used to copy this lady right down to her laugh. Her laugh was even unique. We're going to try to do a song that me and Janie Fricke had a number one record on. It's called A Place to Fall Apart. Freddie Powers and I and Willie Nelson. I don't know how Willie got his name on this song. Now I remember, let me tell you about it. Freddie came up to me and he said, how come you haven't written anything about your divorce? And I said, I don't want to write anything about it. And I said, if I was going to write anything, I'd write a letter. He said, well, write it. And we were in that same room where we rehearsed this song, in the very same room all those years ago. And he said, why don't you write the letter? And I said, I don't want to write her no letter. He said, well, write one. And he said, we won't mail it.
That's the best thing to do with the letter.
Well, that's the best thing to do with one of these kind of letters. And about 3 or 4 weeks before that, when Freddie had came out from Texas and out to California, said, you know, Willie's really got a great title for a song. It's called Place to Fall Apart. And I said, that is a good title. I'll probably never see you eye to eye again. These letters meant to be my last farewell. But you need to understand I'm nearly crazy. You need to know my life's gone to hell.
Lord, write me back and tell me why it ended. I need some final proof to show my heart. I'll be somewhere between I love you and what you're feeling now. Looking for a place to fall apart.
Looking for a place to fall apart. Trying to find a place I can lay my heart. I need to be somewhere hiding when I feel the teardrops start. Looking for a place to call apart.
I can't seem to justify your leaving. me, and I'm bewildered as to how it all came down.
I thought everything was fine till your phone call, the call that turned my world around.
Send me word and tell me why it ended. Oh, I need some final proof to show my heart.
I'll be somewhere between I love you and what you're feeling now. Looking for a place to fall in love. Looking for a place to fall in love. Teardrops start, looking for a place to fall apart.
These things we're going through, I'm with you.
That's a great song, and this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me, and I will be signing off tonight, as I usually do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever, but I will again tomorrow night. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.